We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses. There's so much information out there tailored towards service providers, so we've carved out a space just for you, the creative entrepreneur making and selling physical goods. We're firm believers that everyone has a story to share, and there is much that we can learn from each other's business journey. Whether you are just starting out or a seasoned business owner, this podcast will shed light on new strategies, inspiration, and action steps to help you grow your product-based business. Hey friends, I'm Katie Hunt, and welcome to Proof to Product. Today's guest is Alex Gagnier, the founder of Chez Gagnier, a paper and gift brand that offers greeting cards, wine and spirit tags, mugs, wine glasses, candles, and rocks glasses. Alex attended our Paper Camp conference in February of 2015 before debuting her wholesale line at the National Stationery Show. Since then, she has gone on to expand her product offering, she's added new team members, and her vision for the brand has expanded as well. Chez Gagnier is primarily a wholesale business. 93% of her annual revenue comes from wholesale. Alex currently sells to 1,500 stores throughout the world. She works with sales reps nationally, and she's exhibited at 6 trade shows just this winter alone. So in the last few months, she's been traveling all over at trade shows. On today's episode, Alex is talking about how she made the jump from paper goods to hard goods, how she decided which new product categories to pursue, and she talks about what she attributes her fast growth to. Hey, Alex, welcome to the show.
Hey, Katie, good to be here. I'm super excited.
I am excited to have you too. You have had tremendous growth in your business since you started. And I'd like to first start with, what were you doing before you were slinging cards?
I was running marketing for a tech software solutions and services company here in California. And while great and, you know, making wonderful money, it was definitely not what I was meant to be doing with my life.
Yeah.
So I found a little bit of something on the side that really worked out and has now become Chez Gagnier.
You started letterpress printing in 2013. Was it more just a creative outlet from the, you know, day-to-day grind, or did you have intentions to build a business around it?
It was definitely a creative outlet. My boss, Hans Meis, is a super awesome human, and he was really big on work-life balance and really knew I was kind of feeling a little bit burned out and wanted me to do something outside of work. So he paid for me to take a letterpress class. It could be any class I wanted to take, but during my lunch break, I would walk to Kitson and look at the sugar paper cards and really want to know how that was done. I took a night class at the Art Center of College and Design in Pasadena. Mm-hmm. And then I took about 3 semesters of that after the first one. So
okay,
that's really how I got started.
That's incredible. What was like the light bulb moment of like, wait, no, actually I want to pursue this as a business?
I think seeing people interact with not only the quality of the cards, but then like also laugh with the greeting cards mm-hmm. was really fun. And it's strange to look back now, but I've actually always made greeting cards for people, whether they were like smaller and totally off size, but I've always sent Valentine's Day cards. And that's been something that I've done for years. And so it was really funny that it kind of came full circle and I found something that I was able to communicate like my sense of humor with, as well as like, you know, greet people and make them laugh. And
yeah.
It was a really good fit for me. And so
it's funny. I think back to my childhood and my obsession with like office supplies and, you know, cards and crafting and stuff like that. And it's like, yeah, it's just funny now that I've made a business out of this too. But so tell us about your products. How do you describe them and what kind of product categories do you have?
So our business is based on the model of if you can't make it nice, make it funny. So we have a little bit of everything. We have some really sweet cards and we have some really snarky, sassy, funny cards. It's been with me since I started the business. And now we have really branched out into drinkware and candles. So we have a wholesale line of mugs and rocks glasses. Wine glasses are new for this year. And then our candles are actually our rocks glasses. So we've developed kind of a pretty big line based on like just our branding in general.
Yeah. How many SKUs do you have now?
About 500, which is about 100 too many right now. It's good. It's fun. It's easy for stores to buy from us.
It is, because you've got lots to choose from. I just did a post on Instagram the other day about discontinuing product because it has come up so many times over the last couple of weeks, but we can talk about discontinuing later. For right now, I would like to hone in on like, when you started adding new product categories to your line, what was the decision-making process like? What questions did you ask when deciding yes or no to move forward with a certain category?
So we've moved forward with a few things that are also like not in existence with our line anymore. And a lot of the things, well, actually everything that we've ever brought into the line has been something that I want to use. Okay. And we will never bring anything into the line that is something I wouldn't use. Mm-hmm. That for me is totally disingenuous. And is that a word? I don't even
disingenuous,
know.
Disingenuous, yes.
Disingenuous. But to me, it's really important that I want to like feel our product, use our product, and have it be something that's part of my routine in this fun world that we live in. So for the first thing outside of just greeting cards we did were cocktail paper clips. And those were a really kind of like fun and unique thing. I don't know why, but I was looking for wine glass paper clips and there was no such thing. So I had them made and we use them on all of our cards now. Well, not all of our cards, but a lot of our cards. And we have a bunch of different shaped paper clips that we've really integrated into the line. Mm-hmm. And then after that, hard good wise was our ceramic mugs, and mm-hmm. those have done really well for us. So for me, there were a few things I wanted. I knew I wanted them to be white and I knew I wanted them to be stackable, which was part of that is because I come from a retail background as well. So I think about merchandising our items and how that's going to be merched in store. And a lot of mugs right now don't have that stackability component, but ours do. So you can safely stack 3 mugs. It's a big part of how our retailers retail our items mm-hmm. and are able to stack them higher safely. And then they just kind of have a very visual look that is very Chez Garnier, I think, at this point. So that's kind of been our foray into the first realm of drinkware.
So I want to go back to that in a minute. But one thing about the stackable mugs, I've noticed that you incorporate that into your marketing images and your catalog. And I think it's not only makes for an interesting styled photo, but it has a practical purpose to it, too, to show retailers, look, you can stack these and this is how you can merchandise them.
Absolutely. And I think it's a big selling point too, for even like our direct to customer mm-hmm. customer, like the end user. I have our mugs right now in my house. They're all stackable and beautiful. And there's 2 rows and there's 6 there and I can choose whichever one I want. And I know it's not going to come tumbling down on me like Jenga. And I love it. It's great.
Okay. So going back to your process for identifying new product categories. So you know, it's something you want to be using in your own life. And there's certain things you've wanted. Like, what's your process? Like, you obviously do research and development to figure out where you're going to manufacture it. You probably determine the profit margin and whether the pricing works. Like, what's kind of your loose system there?
So when, especially when we were doing wine glasses, I think is like a really good indication. For me, I want to make sure it's a shape that is not super common and out there. And I want to make sure that it's going to look like a Chez Garnier product, mm-hmm. that it's not going to be just the typical shape that everyone else is using. I look to see where it's made. For me, that's a big deal because it helps us either control the production of it or know the specifications for like all of our glasses made here in the USA. It's the cleanest way to make glasses generally here in the US. And it was important to me that that glass was made here. And then also like our actual people who are foiling it, that they're able to foil on that. So we're calling for samples of glass. We have a distributor that we work with now, and it's just really important for us to be able to see the product, feel the product. I drink out of the product before we actually like brought it on and wanted to make sure it was something that I was comfortable using. Mm-hmm. And then we send it to our foil printer. And so we wanted to make sure that they were able to print on it, especially this glass, because it was a really unique shape and had a bit of a like almost an edge to it, the way it like stems out. So they were able to do it. We liked the print quality. And then also obviously pricing for us has been a big deal. Mm-hmm. We ended up doing a $7 wine glass, which we had asked a lot of our stores, hey, are you comfortable selling a $7 wine glass? And they were like, well, it better be good. It better be a big one. And so it is. It's a big glass. It's a 19-ounce wine glass. But, you know, it's important to us that our retailers are going to want to pick it up. So we're talking to them and what they want. And a lot of our product development has really come from what are our retailers, what are they interested in? What's selling well for them right now? What would they like to see? Mm-hmm. And then how can we make that work with our brand and make sure that it's something that stays true to who we are as a core?
Yeah.
And that's super important for us.
And then looking at margins too. I mean, the bulk of your business is on the wholesale side, correct?
93% of our business is wholesale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. You have to look at the margins pretty carefully there to make sure.
Yeah, it's super important, especially because a lot of our wholesale orders come in through reps. So on top of that, we have another 15% that's going to our rep group, mm-hmm. which obviously they've been absolutely a humongous part of our business. But in order for us to maintain that kind of margin and still make money, you know, we have to really play with that. And then especially quantities have been a big deal with us. The more we can get, the better price breaks we can get. But storing that has been obviously a big challenge for us. So
I was going to say, so some of the challenges of, well, you're moving into this, these hard goods, which is a big shift away from some of the paper goods.
It's the polar opposite. Like, we can store our entire greeting card business in a couple of pallet bays, but our, you know, when our mugs come in from China, we're talking like 16 pallets. Mm-hmm. Like, it's big, it's not small. And storing that is no joke, especially here in LA where, you know, the price per square foot is very high. Mm-hmm. So we've been having to make some adjustments to like how we operate our business and the size of our warehouse and where we're shipping out of and all of that stuff.
Yeah. So. Have you, okay, when you're jumping into a new category, one of the fears I hear from a lot of people is, I don't want to invest huge in inventory in this before I know whether or not it's going to sell. So for example, in the wine glass category, how many SKUs did you start with? And then, you know, I assume you started with fewer SKUs and then built that out further once you knew things were selling. Is that
true? Yes. And I think we had shown a few of our retailers like what we were going to do with wine glasses. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty confident they were going to do well because we've been asked for them for so long. Mm-hmm. So we ordered maybe a little bit more, I think, than we probably would have ordered, like units wise, for just the blank glass and then had them done. And then we didn't realize how well they would sell. And also, we probably should have known a little bit better because we were doing 6 trade shows at the beginning of the year. But, you know, we had no idea. There's only so much risk you want to take with a new product category. So we did 8 different style designs within that. Mm-hmm. They have to build to a case pack of 12. So they can do 1 and 11. It doesn't really matter how you build it because we're all hand packing it. But for us, that was a big deal just to have enough assortment that stores could pick and choose from to get to 12. I thought 4 was way too few. Mm-hmm. 8 felt about right. And then we used some of our like best-selling verbiage on there. And it's a category we're going to expand pretty dramatically here going forward. It's done really well for us.
I guess that's where I was trying to get to. Like, how do you mitigate the risks when you're moving into a new product category, particularly in this case where you're moving away from paper, which is smaller and like you can do mm-hmm. it in fewer quantities? I mean, when you're moving into hard goods, you do have to invest in more units to get that price per piece down. And, you know, you do have to store mm-hmm. it. And so I guess, What kind of things did you do to mitigate the risk on your end?
So for especially for this last mug release, we are trying to do a few less things with swear words on them, because knowing that if we have a SKU completely bomb, which has absolutely happened more than once, we are able to offload that to someone else. Mm-hmm. So that can either go to like a TJ Maxx, a Home Goods, or any like, I think Neiman's Last Call or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of people that have like that outlet, so you can sell them through there. But the big issue for us has been we have a lot of things with the F-bomb on it. So no one can take that. They freak out. They don't take it. So we're sitting on a lot of that inventory. So we do discount it on our website. But for, I mean, we're sitting on a few thousand units of mugs right now that aren't moving.
Wow.
So we either do a warehouse sale, we heavily discount them on our website, but it's a problem, mm-hmm. to be honest. And there's not a really great solution for it. But as I move forward a little bit more into the product expansion, especially with SKUs and wine glasses, we're very conscious of what we're putting on there and what we think will absolutely sell. And then if it's not moving, hopefully it's one of those SKUs that maybe doesn't have as many curse words on it.
Do you ever test phrases and things out on your paper goods first to see how they go and then decide to put it on something like card?
I think we have done that inherently in the past. We pull a lot from our greeting card line onto our hard goods. Mm-hmm. That's been generally how it works. Obviously right now we have some that don't apply to greeting cards, but a lot do apply to our wine glasses from the card line. And that's really how it got started, was we pulled our best-selling phrases from our greeting cards and put them on mugs. And now we're putting them on wine glasses. They're on rocks glasses. They're on candles. But you know, a lot of our things for candles are not going to work that are on our greeting cards. There's only so many phrases I think that can really translate to that.
That's true.
Especially in like a $40 candle.
Right.
So you may not want it to say certain things.
No, but one thing I was impressed with, you know, you use the same rocks glasses as your candle. What's the proper term for that? Container for the candle?
Vessel.
Thank you. I know there's a term for this and I can't think of what it is right now. But you also thought creatively about the products you were bringing to market and how you could repurpose them in different ways, which I thought was really smart.
Yeah, I have a little bit of a beef with the gift industry in general. And it's just, it comes from like a bit of sustainability. My background with that is we're producing so much crap as a society that it's hard sometimes to put out gift items because you feel like it's going directly to a landfill. And I have a really difficult time with that sometimes as a business owner. Like, I don't want to put anything out there that I know is going to never be used again. And that's a big problem with candles in general, is that the vessels are not reusable. They're really difficult to get the wax out of, and you can't really reuse them, even if you want to use it as like a plant or whatever, a plant holder. And for me, when we were doing candles, I wanted to make sure that it was something that could really be reused. And we used our rocks glasses. And so they're great. They're a really hefty candle. They're a 11 ounce pour. And I'm also very conscious of the wax that's going in there. They're a coconut wax blend. It's not soy. It's not paraffin. It's the most sustainable wax on the planet. It's also the cleanest burning wax on the planet right now. Because coconut melts at such a low temperature threshold, the candles last a lot longer. Like if you burn a soy candle next to a Chez Garnier coconut wax blend candle, it's going to burn a lot faster than our candles will. Mm-hmm. Our candles average between like 60 to 65 hours.
Oh, wow.
So I'm very proud of that. I think we don't talk a lot about that necessarily, but for me, it's a huge part of our business. And, you know, we're printing on cotton stock and our paperclip cards are reusable. You can totally pull that paperclip off and reuse it.
Yeah.
And so whenever I'm looking at like goods and new things that we're going to be putting out, I would love to have a twofer component to a lot of those. Mm-hmm. And that's really, I'm very conscious about that and how we're producing those items so that they do have a longer life. And we're thinking about the cycle from like how it's being made all together at the very beginning to like how it will be disposed of at the very end.
Yeah. Okay. So 93% of your business is wholesale. How many shops are you
in? A lot.
It is. How many stores are you in right now?
We're in about 1,500 active accounts across the US and Canada. And then Paper Source is our largest retailer.
Okay. And you launched to wholesale in 2015, May of 2015. So you're coming
yes.
up on 4 years essentially in the wholesale
four
business.
4 years. It's crazy.
I want to take a moment to celebrate that because that is a significant achievement in a short amount of time. I mean, you are
you are
a hard worker with a lot of grit and hustle, which I do believe has contributed to your growth. But for those listening, I'm sure they got to be asking themselves, how did she make this happen? Like, how did she get into so many stores and expand her product line and start working with reps and all these other things, doing all these shows? How did you make that happen in such a short amount of time?
I think that there's many probably facets of how I approached it that got me and the business to this point, but a lot of it is hustle. Absolutely is a humongous part of it. I would say that reps have been a big part of it too, but having a product mix that is really relevant has obviously been incredibly helpful. And we say things that, you know, people think in their head a lot. And especially when we started in like 2015, you know, it had been like about 7 years after the recession, people were starting to spend a little bit more disposable income. So I think that's really helped. And bottom line is people want to have an experience these days. They don't necessarily need a lot of like junk in their lives, but they want to have an experience. And I think people have an experience with our product. So that's been very helpful for how we've grown the business. And, you know, I have sent so much free product out to retailers and just wanted people to see our items in person. I totally believe in the quality of letterpress and like how beautiful it is as an art form. And so getting people to see our product and see like the really high quality of them and then also have a laugh, it's a great experience.
Yeah.
So we've sent a lot of free product out to retailers. I have cold mailed thousands, probably thousands of retailers over the last 4 years. And we've done a lot of shows. We've done a lot of trade shows. It has not been something that I've been hesitant to do. I am a people person, as you can probably tell. And I love meeting with our customers. And I like talking about new opportunities and kind of seeing what's out there. And it's been a lot of hustle. It's been a lot of late nights. And I'm really fortunate to not have to really do that as much anymore. I mean, there was definitely a time there where I was staying up till like 2 o'clock in the morning every night, like reaching out to retailers, finishing out orders, just trying to make it work. And it was hard. It wasn't easy and it's still not easy, but it's fun. And, you know, we're doing a fun thing here.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Well, and how did you start to strip away some of the responsibilities that you, I mean, when you started the business, it was just you and like most of us.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Now you've added some team members and You've done some really strategic things to grow. Like, how did you know it was time to outsource some of that stuff? And who was the first person you brought on?
Well, it was pretty lean and mean for a really long time. And it totally is still. Like, I mean, it's very lean. It's super, super lean. And that's just kind of how we've had to run it from a financial standpoint. It's really important. But there gets to a point where, like, there's only so many greeting cards you can sleeve until 2 o'clock in the morning, and that your sister and your dad and whomever can sleeve for a paper source order.
Right.
And then input those orders and deal with Etsy and deal with Shopify. Like, it becomes a lot. So my first hire was a gal who was super awesome. Her name's Carissa, and she was with us for a little over two years. And she was a great first hire for me. She did literally everything. She wore all of the hats. She did everything but go to trade shows, really. It's like what it is. She did everything behind the scenes.
Okay.
So she was awesome. She would help fulfill orders. She would take cards home and sleeve them. She would help fill orders. She worked out of my apartment for like literally 2 years. I was in my apartment until December of 2017 and four storage units until we moved in January of 2018 into a proper warehouse with like two offices. So it's changed a lot since then. And we just broke our lease there actually 3 weeks ago. And we just moved into a very large warehouse in North Hollywood. We've more than doubled our space size. And it's to really accommodate, like, obviously our drinkware and our harder good items now, but it's hard to delegate. I mean, I am a control freak, and I think being a letterpress printer is probably really a good indication of that. You know, we're really anal about like how our cards look and the quality of them. And that's kind of how I feel about everything in my business. And I wanted to make sure that the people I brought on really understood how important that was to me and how I expect our customers to be treated. I worked for Nordstrom for a long time. I've worked for Hillstone. I have very extensive like customer service training in my background. And I think that really comes forward. And if there's an issue, we always try to make it right. So we never want anyone to feel, you know, spited by us or that we did something wrong. And we're always the first to fix it. And we stand behind our products. So that's kind of been really, really interesting.
I love
it. This business has grown.
So I keep taking pause. I'm like, you've got the warehouse, you've got your team. You did six shows, I think it was this spring, right? Or not this winter, I guess it is.
Yeah, we did six. Yeah.
Which is a lot.
It was a little much,
like,
but I'm not saying we're not going to do it again.
Really? You'd be open to doing that many again in one show season?
Yeah, we are doing that this summer. So that'll be super fun. But the best thing about summer for us is that it's spread out a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like, there is a week off between, but for winter, it's brutal and stuff overlaps and you don't see your husband or your dog, which is super depressing. But it was huge. I mean, we had our best February, like our best month we've ever had in business to date was February of this year.
Wow. And you attribute that to the shows?
100%. Absolutely. Attribute it to the shows, the right product mix, putting out new product. We put out a ton of new stuff. We did like 45 new cards. We had wine glasses. We did new mugs. We did new rocks glasses. We did new candles. I mean, it was a lot. But we really are down to only releasing twice a year now. And we're releasing during those shows. Mm-hmm. We're releasing in Atlanta in January. We're releasing kind of a Dallas in June. But most of it comes out in July, like for the Atlanta show again. So shows are a big part of our business and how we've grown it. But they are very expensive and very time consuming and very demanding. Because before, like a couple years ago, when I didn't really have a team, no one was filling orders while I was on the road. So your business shuts down when you're spending the most money.
Mm-hmm.
You're spending the most money on product that's being made. You're spending the most money on hotels and the actual shows and food and travel. So that was hard. So having a team at this point is so much easier to do that because things are still operating behind the scenes, even if you're not there.
Right.
It's been really helpful, obviously, in that way to kind of keep the business wheels rolling.
Aside from the sales benefit of going to a show, you know, getting from the customer and getting those orders in hand, what are some of the other benefits you've experienced by being at all these shows?
You know, we've talked to some press, which has been really fun. We've had a few opportunities from that. Some podcast opportunities have been really fun through that. I love doing pool because it's a really different opportunity to be in a different industry, like be in the fashion industry and see different ways people operate their businesses and what's popular and on trend right then. And I mean, meeting people has just been such an amazing opportunity. And then a huge part of it is seeing like our friends and making friends in the industry. That is if that wasn't part of trade shows, I don't think I could do it. Like I love seeing my friends there. I love making new friends. And there's a lot of opportunities that come even through manufacturing. We found our mug manufacturer through a trade show, and our new mug manufacturer. So there's a lot of interesting opportunities that can come up just besides sales. And then obviously inspiration and partnerships and people you can collaborate with. There's a lot of opportunity that's not just sales themselves.
Right. Yeah. I met sales reps. I had licensing partners I met.
Yeah. Sales reps is a huge thing. Absolutely. For sure.
I feel like that keeps coming up throughout this episode unintentionally. But here we are. Okay. So you did 6 different shows this winter. How do you decide which shows are best for your business and which ones, you know, are worth pursuing for you?
I think the metrics at the end of the day kind of determine like how we're doing at trade shows. But for us, it's kind of been like a throw money at it and see what happens because, you know, we make room in our budget to do that. So we are doing all of those exact same shows again in the summer. And I think once you become someone who does all those shows, it becomes hard to not do them, to be honest. People expect you to be there. And it was weird because this was the first season where I was not at New York Now. I flew to New York Now to set up New York Now, but I flew out on Saturday and then I set up pool on Sunday in Las Vegas. So it was weird to not see my customers there who I've been familiar with for the last few years. And it's weird to almost like not be the face of your company at a show where you're used to like having that kind of interaction. So for us, it's definitely the number of people that are coming into the booth, the generation of leads. And then there's a lot of things that go into it, and it's not just all financial.
Right.
It's definitely like at the end of the day, like there's certain partnerships for us that, you know, didn't happen at the show. It didn't happen 2 months after the show. It didn't happen 6 months after the show, but 9 months after the show, we might have like an amazing partnership. So it's sometimes it's a little bit hard financially to see what your return is on investment, but a lot of it is, I think, how you come away feeling after the show.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
That's been interesting.
What do you feel has been the biggest challenge to you as you've been growing this business?
The cost of living in Los Angeles.
yes, that is true.
That's a big part of it. I think for me, being able to delegate has been a big challenge for me, and being able to let go of some stuff and also really give clear instructions on what I need someone to do. So that's been really challenging. And then I think part of it too is getting people over the hump of thinking that our business is built on swear words. That's been a really interesting thing for us, especially in the South when we do Atlanta and we do Dallas. It's, you know, it's the Bible Belt. It's a totally different way of life. It's a very different population who's buying our product. And sometimes when they see something that, you know, they may not agree with, they'll turn their head to the entire line, even though we have 500 SKUs. So I'm a firm believer that like you could, any store could find something in our line that they could carry because we have enough product and it varies enough that really any store could carry us. We're sold in an aeronautics company's company store that's not allowed to have any swear words. Nothing referred to as drinking, and they can totally do that. We totally have that option. So
that's cool.
I think the brand perception for people who are very wary of curse words or, you know, snark and sassy humor has been a challenge for us, but it's also been a reason we've done incredibly well on the flip side. It does stand out and people like it and think it's funny, and you know, it's not for everyone at the end of the day, like that's totally okay. But for us, it's kind of educating our consumer and educating, you know, all consumers in that way.
Well, what advice do you have for anyone else that's coming up in this product space and maybe they're just getting started?
I think do your research on a little bit of everything, like really think through like what your product offering is, where you're going to store it, what your margins are, who you're selling it to, what channels you're selling those through. Definitely like look at your margins. If you have reps, you really need to look at that and make sure that's financially going to work for you. And at the end of the day, I think you can do a lot of, you can totally get analysis paralysis. That is a big thing. And you can just like kind of spin and not make a decision because you're looking at all these other things. But for me, it's always just been about diving in and just doing it. As soon as you start working towards something, it's a lot easier than thinking about it forever. It may not necessarily be the right decision, but you can totally pivot and change it into something else or work a different way. And, you know, I think we've been able to pivot really, really well. And that's really helped our business. We see what's doing bad and we can change that pretty effectively and pretty quickly. And then we can see what's doing well. And then, you know, maybe copy that for the future into a new product or just the way that we operate as a business. Yeah, so
absolutely. I think the agility of being a business owner is a very special thing. And that,
definitely,
you know, we can decide to move forward with something. We can decide to cut it from the line, whatever it is. You know, we can't always do that in corporate America. So
totally. And that's like for many things for us right now, like we're assessing how we're doing our accounting software and seeing if we can use a totally different one to integrate like a CRM, inventory. And yeah, it's been a really big challenge. Like what's worked for us in the past isn't necessarily working right now. And we've really had to kind of assess where we're at with that. And that's not just with, you know, money, that's right, with social strategy and with email marketing and our design, and maybe also me not doing as much design because I'm a lot slower at it. So there's definitely different ways that we're trying to pivot and make, you know, better use of our time so that we can make more money.
Yeah. Well,
live here in LA.
And live here in LA. Well, and kudos to you. I mean, as entrepreneurs, we're constantly growing. We're constantly shifting. You know, you've refined that, you know, you want to do the shows and you know, you want to do 2 releases a year. And now that those systems are kind of in place, you can turn towards some of your marketing and some of your other, you know what I mean? Like, once we get something set up, then we can turn and focus on other aspects, but it's always shifting.
Yeah, like we have a pretty set structure right now.
Right.
And that's really nice because we know, like right now I'm finishing our designs for June and July.
Yeah.
And that's what I need to be focusing on right now. And without that kind of structure, I mean, you could float for a long time, but for us, wholesale is our main business and that's what we have to do. So it's good because I need that kind of structure in my life.
I have to tell you, I'm very happy to hear that you're almost done with your designs for summer because we've worked together in the past and I know how, like,
I know
you have big ideas and lots of things you want to do. And I'm always like, Alex, you have to set a design deadline for yourself. And so it makes me happy. But anyhow, yep. Well, what is next for Chez Garnier? What do you have coming up in the next, you know, 6 months or so?
Yeah. So we're doing all the summer shows, which is super exciting. We're putting out some obviously new product designs and we're going to have a little bit deeper selection within like our candle line. Our wine glasses are going to be way more expanded. We're probably doubling, if not tripling, our wine glass offering right now. And then we're doing some new categories. So I have been working on a few for a very long time and one of them is glass straws. And so help me God, we will sell them this year. It's just been a really, really big challenge to get the packaging done for that in a way that I feel comfortable and is on brand. And so it's exciting. I'm excited for that. And, you know, we're hoping to also change the pie of our wholesale to direct to consumer business. And we're making some moves right now in order to kind of change that so that maybe it's a little bit more like 1585, which would be great. I'd really like that. The margins on that are a lot stronger. So
they
hopefully
are.
That part of our business will change a little bit as well.
Cool. Well, where can people find you online if they want to check out your products or purchase from your online store?
They can find us at www.chezgarnier.com. And I will spell it for you. It is C-H-E-Z-G-A-G-N-E. It also looks like Chez Gagne. And that is the same for our Instagram handle. So it's at Chez Garnier. You can find me at Alex Gagne. If you can't spell it, you're just never going to find us. I don't know. It's going to be great.
Well, we will include those links in the show notes so they will be able to find you. But Alex, thank you for coming on today and sharing your story. I think
It's
really cool for people to hear. I've really enjoyed watching your growth. I mean, you came to Paper Camp in 2015, right before you first launched the stationery show. And it's just been so fun to watch you take this concept and ideas that you have and really grow it into this extensive product line and teams and warehouses. And I don't know, it's just been fun. So I've been cheering you on.
Thanks, girly. I appreciate it. Literally couldn't have done it without you.
Hey friends, every time we host Paper Camp, I am blown away by the talent, the thoughtful questions, the camaraderie, and the determination of our campers. When they head home, these people are ready to build out their product line, they're ready to refine their pricing, create a new catalog, and pitch wholesale buyers. They're no longer wondering how much product they need, how they should approach these buyers, and whether they're ready for wholesale or even a trade show. They know exactly where they are going next and how to take strategic, confident action. if you want to see your products lining the shelves of your favorite retail shops, join us for Paper Camp September 19th and 20th in Los Angeles. We have a brand new venue that I'm super excited for you to see, and seats are limited. Our last 16 conferences sold out quickly, so for more details, head over to prooftoproduct.com/papercamp for more details and to register. Thanks so much for spending time with us today. Head on over to prooftoproduct.com to join the conversation, access our show notes, and discover free resources to help you build your product-based business. We'll be back next week with a new episode. Thanks again.